30 years ago, the average supermarket carried about 15,000 items. Sounds a lot, but in 2012, that number had risen to 42,868. In 1998 alone, food manufacturers added 11,000 new foods to the supermarket shelves. Things like condiments, candy, snacks, baked goods, soft drinks, cheese products, and ice cream novelties. So is your nutrition knowledge sufficient to cut through the false advertising and make wise choices for yourself and your family? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Narita McKibben. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. So what's the best weight loss diet? And how much protein do you need if you're working out every day? On today's show, we've got the answers to these and many of the foodie questions that you've sent in. A popular trend is a low-carb diet. But check out this video on carbohydrates.
Carbohydrates are an essential part of any diet. We need them to live. They're in almost everything we eat. They're in all fruits, vegetables, grains, and even dairy. And most processed foods are loaded with carbs. Carbs provide our body with energy. They're one great source of fuel. When we take in too many carbs, then we have fuel to spare, and our body stores that as excess fat. Let's break that down. Carbohydrates are made of sugar molecules. Simple carbohydrates like glucose, fructose, fruit sugar, and sucrose, table sugar, need almost no digesting. They can enter the bloodstream immediately and therefore are a fast source of energy. Complex carbohydrates contain starches that are composed of longer chains of sugars. They provide a longer lasting energy source as well as fiber and nutrients. Our bodies break down complex carbs into glucose, the sugar that is the primary fuel that our cells burn to give us energy. When we refer to good carbs, we mean carbs, usually complex carbs, that are as close to their natural state as possible, that is, unrefined. Good carbs are good because in addition to the carbs, they contain nutrients we need, like vitamins, minerals, and a range of phytonutrients. Bad carbs are considered bad because of one of two things. They are simple sugars, like the ones in sodas and candy, or they're complex carbs that have been refined, stripped of all that good stuff during processing. These bad carbs are found in foods like cakes, cookies, and crackers, as well as in white flour and white bread. Another example of a bad carb is white rice. It begins as a whole grain of brown rice whose outer layers contain healthy fiber, vitamins, and minerals. During refinement, however, this nutritious outer portion is removed and the brown rice is transformed into white rice. What's left of the grain is the inside, just a starchy white center. Basically, our body sees it as a little ball of sugar. That sugar is quickly absorbed into the bloodstream and rapidly raises blood sugar levels. We need sugar, but only in combination with all those other good things. Don't be fooled by labels that say enriched. The enrichment process adds back only 5 nutrients to refined flour, but all the other nutrients from the whole grain are still lost. So eat good carbs. You can satisfy your sweet tooth by eating fruit. Choose flour, breads, cereals, and pasta made of whole grains. Look for the words whole grain or whole wheat, and it should be the first ingredient listed. Good carbs tend to be high in fiber and will keep you fuller longer. For a healthy, balanced diet, eat carbs that are whole in nature. Our bodies do best with whole foods as nature intended it. After all, Mother Nature is pretty smart.
Yes, she is. Now, to answer your questions about food and eating and weight loss, I have a nutrition expert on the show today, but first, the news. In the headlines today, who's to blame for obesity in America? What's in your caramel? And dietary link to inflammatory bowel disease. When it comes to obesity, Americans point the finger at individual responsibility. In a recent survey, 94% of Americans say that people are responsible for their own weight issues. The other 6% blamed government, pharma policy, restaurants, parents, food manufacturers, and grocery stores. factor in the findings of another recent study that showed that the nutritional knowledge of the American population is inadequate for the enormous task before it, and then the recent reclassification of obesity by the American Medical Association, it's gone from being a risk factor for other diseases to being a disease in and of itself. And when that news was shared with one group of obese people, they responded by increasing their caloric intake. Oh dear. Why not focus on empowering people to make informed choices about food and exercise? Caramel colour, added to many soft drinks and some foods, is an artificial, potentially carcinogenic chemical called 4-methylimidazole, or 4-mel for short. It's been shown to cause cancer in mice, but has not been studied in humans. So, under Californian law, any food or beverage that exposes consumers to more than 29 micrograms per day should carry a warning label. But many cans of soft drinks tested by Consumer Report were over the limit and did not carry the warning. Some cans in New York had over 150 micrograms when testing was launched, though that later dropped to 30. Considering that other caramel colour options are available to food and drink manufacturers, I wonder why 4-mel even has an approval, or are they all equally dangerous? Animal-based diets may contribute to the development of inflammatory bowel disease. A new Harvard study published in Nature this month involved 11 volunteers who consumed either an entirely animal-based diet or a plant-based diet for 5 days. Those on the animal-based diet had an 8-fold increase in the gut population of a bacterium linked to inflammatory bowel disease. In contrast, the plant-based group had a 3-fold drop in the same bacterium. In addition, the gut concentrations of deoxycholic acid, a compound linked to liver cancer, rose in the animal-based group. It's amazing how quickly bacteria populations adapt to metabolize either plant or animal products. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Roseanne Rust was a speaker at the recent American College of Lifestyle Medicine annual meeting. She's an experienced dietitian, nutritionist, and she provides weight management coaching and has co-authored several books. I asked her why carbohydrates have been given such a bad rap.
Well, there's a misunderstanding that carbohydrates make you fat, and they don't. And it's important to recognize that there are different kinds of carbohydrates. There's simple carbohydrates and more complex carbohydrates.
So is it one kind of those that should get the bad rap?
Well,
or should
I
get
really
more
don't
of
a... like to categorize food into bad and good. Okay. We should be making better choices most of the time. So the more simple carbohydrates, such as your sugars or refined bread products and refined rice and pastas, have a little bit of a higher glycemic index, and they don't tend to fill us up. And in the case of sugar, it doesn't provide any nutrition for us. But of course, we like some of those foods, so it's okay to include some in smaller amounts, but we want to focus on the complex carbohydrates. And people often tend to go overboard with portions because they enjoy carbohydrates. So it's more about the overall portion in the day than trying to eliminate, there's no reason to eliminate carbs from your diet.
So portion control, it's more a comfort food as well, isn't it? Carbohydrates, do we tend to go for them?
It is, and you know, there's a natural sort of mood booster to them. serotonin levels go up a little when we eat some carbs. So people often do associate things like a pasta dish or a warm creamy rice or risotto with comfort, but it's really about the portion. And then you also want to include some of those more complex carbohydrates. Of course, vegetables are carbohydrate, also provide a little protein, but loaded with nutrients. And some of the more intact grains, things like quinoa or brown rice.
After the break, Phil's here to show us a delicious Mediterranean tapenade. But first, let's see what the doctor ordered.
Here's your prescription. What? A plant-based diet for my heart disease?
Yes, it's going to help your body repair the damage and reverse the disease.
But doctor, a plant-based diet is hard.
Not as hard as if you don't.
Well, what could happen?
Well, you see, if you don't, I may have to do open heart surgery where we take a saw and we open your breastbone, strip the veins out of your legs, and replace the arteries in your heart.
Oh, you're not touching my breastbone with that saw, Doc.
Well, what do you think of the plant-based diet now?
Oh, I think it's great. Give me a carrot.
Here you go. And while we're talking about it, I want to talk about the physical activity.
I wanted to talk to you about that, Doc. I can't do it.
Why?
I work into the night. I'm tired when I get home. And there's a couple of television shows that I just can't miss. There's Facebook time, computer, texting. I just don't have time. I'm sorry.
How about the morning?
I might sweat. I might get sore muscles. Exercise is hard, Doc.
But not as hard as if you don't do the exercise for your diabetes.
Like what could happen?
Well, you see, your feet could get constant pins and needles and tingling, and then they go numb.
Well, I've got that already, so I don't have to exercise, do I?
But you could reverse that. With diet and exercise, you can get the feeling back in your feet again.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And that's not all.
Well, what's not all?
Well, if your diabetes progresses and you get a foot ulcer, it doesn't heal, and then you get gangrene, then I'd have to use this saw to do an amputation.
Oh, you're awful saw happy, Doc. Get those things away from me.
Oh, well, many diabetics also become impotent.
Okay, I'm going to exercise. I'll do the exercise. I'll do the diet.
Great. You can pay with lifestyle change now, or you can pay with surgery later. It's your choice. Doctor's orders.
The American Civil War lasted from 1861 to 1865, 4 years of misery for the nation. The death toll was in excess of 700,000, more than in all the other wars in the United States or involving the United States, from the Revolutionary War down to the Vietnam War. But what if I were to tell you there is a battle raging right now with a far higher death toll? And then what if I told you that war began in heaven? Well, it did, and you're involved. Now let me explain. Long ago, God created a perfect world. But according to the Bible, it's hard to understand, but there was war in heaven. And Lucifer, a perfect angel, became Satan, who was kicked out of heaven and came down here to the earth. Now why would he rebel? You know why? He wanted worship. He was jealous and he wanted to sit in God's place and receive the worship that belongs only to God. When he came down here to the earth, he didn't lose sight of that objective. He still wants that worship. So he convinces the world that God is bad and that people are better off without God. Now you get to decide who's telling the truth, and you can choose whose side you're on.
Fortress and my deliverer. My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold.
Welcome to the kitchen. Now, there's nothing like a healthy snack where you can snack and not feel guilty, because so many snacks are bad for us. They come in crinkly packets. This is a really easy one that, if you like olives, is going to taste fantastic. So it's called olive tapenade, and what it contains is 1 can of pitted black olives, and we drain those. A can of pitted green olives, and again we drain those. One clove of garlic, finely chopped. Two teaspoons of chopped fresh basil. 2 teaspoons of chopped fresh thyme. 2 teaspoons of chopped fresh flat-leaf parsley. 1 teaspoon of chopped fresh oregano. And an optional extra 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil. So all we need to do is take our black olives, which, by the way, have plenty of iron because they're really green olives that have been dyed black with some ferrous sulfate. Some green olives, and these are of green but ripe olives. And you can see that these green olives are a little bit spotty. Like here's one that you can see has got dark black spots on it. That means it's ripe. It's green, but it's ripe. And because they're spotty when they're ripe, they like to color them black for us. Then we throw in all our herbs. It's nothing like fresh herbs to make a dish taste fantastic. And of course, not forgetting some fantastic garlic. Just chop those up. Throw them in, and now with our stick blender, so we can make this a very low on dishes meal or snack, let's blend this up. We want to leave some chunks in there, so that's about how we want it. And then you can serve that with crackers or on baguettes or with your favorite toast. So come on over, let's see what we've got here. We've got all of the above, some nice whole wheat bagels. It's hard to get French bread that's whole grain, so we've just got ordinary French bread. And this is what it looks like. And it is fantastic. Now, we didn't put the olive oil in. That's an optional extra, but if you do the olive oil, you're going to want to add that last. Now, let's see, how is it? That's fantastic. For all you olive lovers, you've got to make this recipe. It's really yummy, all those lovely herbs. So enjoy. Now, what impact does a low carbohydrate diet have on health in general? Check this out.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good, how are you? Do you have anything low carb?
Recent mother Tisha Hickerson of Cleveland is watching her carbs so she can
actually look good in a swimsuit for once after a year and a half.
But according to a recent study in the British Medical Journal, a low-carb, high-protein diet may be setting her up for cardiovascular problems later in life.
They looked at a group of about a little over 43,000 Swedish women, which is a pretty large group, and they followed them over 15 years.
And of the women studied, 1,270 suffered heart attacks or strokes, according to Lisa Simperman, a clinical dietitian at University Hospitals.
With a high-protein diet, we see increases in CRP. CRP is an indicator of inflammation. So one of the things that I wonder about is, does this type of diet, high-fat, high-protein, low-carbohydrate, cause changes in our metabolism that promote an inflammatory effect?
And cardiovascular disease, like heart attack or stroke, begin with inflammation.
The high protein and high fat content of some of these popular diets like Atkins is not necessarily beneficial long term.
The low carb diet, very popular with men who loved the idea of just eating a steak. Yes. Do you think the results would be the same for them?
My guess would be that this would also hold true for them.
The report also reinforces the need for balance in a woman's diet and that carbohydrates really aren't that bad.
It's that we're making poor choices when choosing carbohydrates. So you want to be looking for high fiber carbohydrates like whole wheat breads or fruits, for example.
A diet that any woman can stick with.
It's about you making a lifestyle change as opposed to, oh, I just want to look good in my swimsuit this season. You know, I think that it's really about looking good and feeling good as well.
In Cleveland, Melissa Reed, Fox 8
Thank
News.
You.
Yes, I want to look and feel good. How about you? Today we're discussing controversies in nutrition with Roseanne Rust, a dietitian nutritionist from Philadelphia. Before the break, we were discussing the comfort factor that food brings. I asked her how much we try to comfort and soothe ourselves with food.
For some people, that's a real issue. You know, our goal is to be aware of our hunger cues and eat accordingly. When we're hungry, we should eat. And for a lot of people, they have sort of lost touch with those cues. They aren't aware of hunger, they aren't aware of fullness and satiety either.
Is it possible to get those things, to get those sensations back?
Absolutely. And it's a matter of paying attention, a little bit of attention. Writing down what you're doing and recognizing that sometimes you use food for comfort, or sometimes you're, you know, possibly eating too quickly. When we eat very quickly, we tend to not be paying attention. And then there's actually that brain mechanism where it takes 20 minutes for our stomach to register to our brain that it's full. So if we're, you know, trying to eat at our desk at lunchtime and not taking an adequate break, and we hurry up and eat in 10 minutes, we may overeat and not realize it until a little bit later, and then we're uncomfortable. So
one way to get around that, if you have to eat quickly, is know what portion is the right amount and stop.
Absolutely.
Would that be right?
Awareness. Yes. And ideally, hopefully you don't have to eat quickly.
Yes.
You can modify your environment and pay a little bit more attention. So when you're using food for comfort, you know, it's really a matter of paying attention and becoming more aware of where is that stress, or where are those other indicators coming from that make you want to eat when you're not hungry.
So stop and look at that sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Could be stress, could be boredom. And it's often mindless. You know, we're not really paying attention to not only the hunger factor, but what we're actually eating and enjoying and savoring our food. So that's your goal.
Let's move to protein. We've teased carbohydrates a little bit there, but how much protein should we be having? What's the ideal?
Well, I can give you sort of the science of that, which is, 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram body weight. You know, for most people, that's going to be somewhere between 50 and maybe 80 grams of protein a day. Our bodies can really only take up and utilize about 30 grams of protein at one meal. So often, at least with the American diet, we tend to save up all of our protein for the end of the day. And ideally, we want to be kind of distributing our protein through the day, because it does help with satiety of the meal.
Now, people who are working out, building muscle, bodybuilders, mm-hmm. or people are now getting into extreme fitness,
right.
How much protein will they be needing?
Weightlifters, bodybuilders, elite athletes do need a little bit more. They need not quite twice as much, but about 40% more protein mm-hmm. a day than, you know, sort of the average person. You know, in some gyms, you might hear something like, 200 to 300 grams of protein a day. That's too much. You know, as I said, the research shows we can really only utilize about 30 grams of protein at a time. So anything beyond that is really not providing any benefit. But athletes and weightlifters, bodybuilders do put a little more wear and tear on their muscle and need a little bit more protein.
Mm. Now, there are diets for weight loss mm-hmm. that really... they give the carbs the bad rap, push carbs very low, which leaves you with the other two macronutrients, which is fat and protein.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be predominating, and I think of Atkins diet, perhaps South Beach diet. Do they achieve the weight loss?
In many cases, they do. Also, the paleo diet is another recent high-protein diet.
Mm-hmm.
They achieve the weight loss for a couple of reasons. Number one, because of the amount of protein in the meal plan, It does help with satiety, meaning people get full and they stop eating. And number two, overall, the total calorie intake is moderated. So less calories in, weight loss occurs. Another thing that occurs is the body goes into a ketosis state. And that tends to utilize fat stores a little bit more. But for the long term, the question is, some of those diets eliminate whole food groups, you know, entire groups of, some eliminate a lot of vegetables, some eliminate a lot of grains, and there are going to be some vitamins missing in that regard. And the other issue is, how sustainable is it? You know, is someone going to be able to eat that way for the rest of their days?
So you're not a proponent of a diet?
I'm not really a proponent of diets, because they tend to invoke the idea that you go on this diet and then you achieve a goal and then you're done. And, you know, we're never done. We have to eat to sustain ourselves. We have to eat for the rest of our lives. We can't completely give up food. So I really encourage people to adopt an eating behavior, an eating pattern, and the kinds of foods that they want to eat, that they enjoy, but still balance out their health.
And it's sustainable.
And that are sustainable, absolutely.
And the thing about the Atkins diet and things, along with the protein, you're getting a significant amount of saturated fats. And from a health perspective, if you look globally at your well-being, you're really not doing yourself a good turn.
Right. The high-protein diets across the spectrum vary. Atkins is high in saturated fat. Mm. It's pretty clear that saturated fat is an issue in terms of heart disease, possibly cancer as well. And possibly even brain health. There's some new research that's come to light about saturated fat and cognitive impairment. So I would steer clear of Atkins.
This discussion continues right after the break.
The combination of an explosion of scientific information and its dispersal via the web means that we are bombarded with conflicting health advice wherever we turn. So how do you know who and what to believe? I recommend testing theories against the truth of the scriptures, because there are actually some sound health principles in the Bible. Take the creation diet as an example. God advised Adam and Eve to eat fruits, grains, nuts, and seeds. But when they sinned, death and disease was waiting right around the corner, and so he added green leafy vegetables. You thought they were just punishment, didn't you? But they are powerful for healing and restoration. If you hear that veggies help with cleansing, you're on the right track. After the flood, there were no gardens or orchards, so God introduced meat with some restrictions. He said to avoid eating fat and blood. Science tells us that these cause our platelets to be sticky and increase inflammation and the risk of heart attacks. Then there are the scavengers on the planet. In the oceans, shellfish and sharks. Pigs on the land. Vultures and birds of prey in the sky. God forbids eating them. Science tells us they have a high parasite count and transmit diseases like hepatitis A. There are some good reasons to leave them off your plate. Then I think of Elijah beside the brook being fed by a raven every day. How many meals were delivered each day? Two. So perhaps there's some wisdom to avoid the grazing plan of eating all through the day and instead have 2 to 3 meals a day. Science suggests increased colorectal cancer rates with a higher meal frequency, impaired digestive function, and altered gut bacteria. The Bible is a practical book filled with wisdom. Read it today.
received a question this month from one of you saying that you'd received a diagnosis of celiac disease and asking if that's the same as gluten intolerance and what you can eat. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to focus on grains and look at the various options that are out there. And if you have celiac disease, gluten is definitely going to damage the lining of your intestines, creating small ulcers. Now that intestinal lining is so delicate and so important for absorption that you need to take this diagnosis quite seriously. So let's have a look at the different grains that we've got here. I'm going to start over here where we've got basically four grains that would typically be glutinous grains. Rye, barley, wheat, and oats. Now oats is a little bit different. Oats is a grain that doesn't contain gluten, but it's often processed in the same plants as the rye, barley, and wheat. And so it gets contaminated with gluten, and for someone with celiac disease, you need to get gluten-free oats. Now, if we look at what else we've got, we have a host of other grains here. So let's run through those. Here we have buckwheat, and from the name it sounds as though you would expect this to have gluten because it's got the word wheat in it. But in fact, buckwheat is a seed and it doesn't contain any gluten. And it's also a very nice grain to cook with. You can put that in a blender and you've got some nice buckwheat flour. Of course, corn, which you get in many different forms, and that's a very common grain to use. Rice. I've got red rice here, but you can get, of course, brown rice, wild rice, all kinds of different rices, and they each have a slightly different glycemic index, but rice is rice, and as long as it's not white, it's good for you. Quinoa is available in three different colours. Here I've got a red quinoa and a white quinoa. Depending on what colour you would like your food to be, it's probably one of the most expensive grains on the market, but it has a lovely flavour. Then we have millet, and finally, amaranth. And you'll notice that these last four grains, or the three I should say, quinoa, millet and amaranth, are tiny little seed-like grains. They are quite what we'd call ancient grains. They are quite high in protein, and they're often labelled superfoods. So these are good ones to occasionally put into your diet. Now, most countries around the world have a favourite grain. Ours happens to be wheat. However, wherever you live, I would encourage you to try to include a variety of grains because then you'll get a variety of vitamins and minerals. Now, if you live in a country where that's not possible, don't worry, but be sure to have a whole grain, not white rice, for example, or you are going to run the risk of major deficiencies and diabetes.
Are midnight raids on the refrigerator spoiling your healthy eating plans? Three recent studies found a delicious way to control your hunger cravings: eating more whole grains. The studies all showed that people who eat more whole grains actually eat less because they feel fuller with less food. Regularly enjoying oatmeal, quinoa, and other whole grains will make you feel full more quickly, and it will keep the hunger pangs away. Adding whole grains to your daily diet is another ageless advantage.
And now for the questions I've received from you via Facebook, text and phone. Manju emailed. He says, I cannot afford to buy a water filter. Is it equally safe to boil water in a stainless steel pot and then drink the boiled water? Well, Manju, if the water doesn't come from a clean source, then it is a very good idea to boil your water at least for 10 minutes. But, you know, if it's a clean water source, but it's had chemicals added to kind of clean that water, then a filter is better at removing those chemicals. Boiling water with chemicals in will tend to evaporate the water and make the chemicals more concentrated rather than giving you better drinking water. So I hope that answers your question. Elizabeth phoned recently. She says, I was diagnosed with celiac disease. Is that the same as gluten intolerance? What should I eat? I've eaten a lot of savouries made with gluten, so what can I do to replace that?
Well, Elizabeth, anyone who has the diagnosis of celiac disease should steer well clear of gluten because, yes, you are gluten intolerant and it is harmful to the lining of your intestines. So avoid wheat, barley and rye. Oats don't have gluten in, but they tend to be processed in the same plants and therefore are often contaminated with gluten, but you can buy gluten-free oats. The other grains are all good, and to replace the savouries that have gluten, think about peas, beans and lentils. Now, Jessica called. She says, I am 17 years old and I want to know what causes food allergies to start, for example, ones that you're born with. Well, Jessica, that's a really good question. I wish we knew the answer to it. A food allergy is caused when your immune system mistakenly treats a harmless protein that's found in certain foods as a threat to your health. Then it releases a number of chemicals which trigger an allergic reaction causing anaphylaxis or hives. And then other reactions to food can include heartburn, indigestion, eczema, diarrhea and reflux. So lots of other digestive type and even skin type reactions can also appear. And we don't know why that happens. Why does the immune system make that mistake? And why has the rate increased sevenfold over the last 20 years? We just don't know. One theory is that babies are not getting exposed to enough germs to develop a healthy, kind of robust immune system. Another theory relates to the fact that there are like every year another 4,000 additives or chemicals added to our food. That would be another good reason. And then others suggest that genetically modified foods are also creating some of that problem. There's not enough information to tell us which of those theories is true or if all are partly true. But we'll have to wait and see, and we're still looking. Thanks for those questions. You can call us anytime. Leave your health question for me to answer. The numbers 855-400-HEALTHY, that's 855-400-4325. And to text or call from overseas, it's 301-960-5144. But if you do that, please leave me your email address so I can email you back overseas. You can also question me via our Go Healthy for Good Facebook page or by Twitter. Now let's see what's at the grocer's today. The blackberry grows wild and can be a nasty weed with all those thorns, but it produces such sweet, delicious berries. We're not the only ones that like eating blackberries. So do the birds, the badgers, and even the red fox. And deer enjoy grazing on their leaves. You can see from the dark, rich colour of the berries, there are lots of polyphenols like anthocyanins, quercetin, salicylic acid, and ellagic acid. They contain a good amount of soluble fibre. And with all the antioxidants, they are good for the heart and also for the brain. In fact, they are the top antioxidant food in the United States. Their seeds are even nutritious, containing omega-3 and omega-6 fats, as well as some protein and carotenoids. A whole cup only contains 60 calories. Don't cook them, just eat them raw. Bon appetit! What an abundance of colour and variety. The energy in our food comes from either carbohydrates, proteins, or fats. Now, the calorie content of a gram of fat is 9 calories, compared with only 4 for carbohydrates and protein. So by reducing fat, you can make a significant reduction in your total calorie intake. I asked Roseanne what percent of our daily calories she recommends should come from each source. Is there an ideal?
Is there an ideal? There's really an ideal range. In terms of fat, 20 to 35% would be acceptable of total calories. Carbohydrate, 45 to 65% carbohydrate. And protein, 15 to 25% protein. The important aspect of the dietary fat in the diet is that you want to make sure that you're including some of those good monounsaturated fats and polyunsaturated fats and limiting the total amount of saturated fat. 7 to 10% max saturated fat per day is recommended. Carbohydrates, you want to choose nutrient-dense carbohydrates, so fruits and vegetables, 5 to 10 servings a day. Vegetables like sweet potatoes, the white potato gets a bad rap too, but it's still loaded with vitamin C and potassium. Whole grains, more intact grains. those should be the focus of your carbohydrate, not the processed ones, less sugar, less processed food, baked goods, and those kinds of things. And then finally, protein. You want to try to choose lean proteins. Plant sources, beans are a wonderful food. They're high in protein, they're high in fiber, they're high in B vitamins. So beans are an excellent protein alternative.
The thing about beans is no fat at all.
No fat.
You don't even have to talk lean for legumes.
Right.
They just come that way.
With nutrition, protein, yes. Vitamins, minerals, so they're wonderful. Eggs provide protein. Low-fat dairy can provide some protein too.
So what would you say composes the best diet?
The best diet. I really don't think there's one best diet for everyone. I tend to favor the Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet. DASH stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. I think they're both reasonable diets that most people can adapt to. They include a variety of foods. They're both really plant-based diets. They encourage lots of fruits and vegetables, low to moderate amounts of sodium. DASH diet is encouraging a little less sodium, Mediterranean, moderate sodium, lots of healthy oils such as olive oil, using nuts, and they're well balanced. A variety of food, lots of things to enjoy.
Give us some tips to how to encourage ourselves and those around us to eat healthy.
Well, and this is a really important aspect of eating, is how we eat, not just what we eat. You know, I think there's sometimes almost too much focus on that best diet or what do I eat? You know, that's the question I get all the time. What should I eat? Is this good? Is this bad? Can I have that? Can I not have that?
Right.
And for many people who are either suffering from being overweight, obesity, or some sort of disease, it's their eating habits that they really need to sort of get a grip on and set some goals for,
what
as opposed to just those choices of food.
Okay, so what do you mean by eating habits? Explain, tease that out for us.
Sure. You know, it's the body works best when we deliver nutrition to it gradually over our working day. So depending on when, some people work the night shift, some people are on the day shift. Whenever we're active, that's when we want to be fueling ourselves. So trying to plan 3 regular meals a day, not skipping meals, not going long hours without having anything to eat. Thinking about that emotional eating. If you find that you have some stress in your life, and we all have stress at one time or another, how are you managing that? Are you skipping meals? Are you using extra food to sort of fill that void and manage that stress? Are you getting enough sleep? Sleep deprivation is really related to not just our overall function, but it can really impact the decisions we make about how we eat. So those are really non-food kind of behaviors that we need to recognize and kind of get in check before we can really go on to eating well.
What about how much we chew?
How much we chew?
Yes.
Well, mastication is important. You know, there's enzymes in our mouth that begin the digestive process. So, you know, again, slowing down how quickly we eat helps us eat less. And you know, taking time to chew your food certainly helps digest that food as well.
And it's been shown, I believe, to reduce intake by chewing. Chewing more.
Yes, because it allows you to be a little bit more mindful. I think that's the bottom line there. You're not rushing through the meal, and you're actually tasting what you're eating and enjoying that.
Now, can I throw some questions to you that come from our viewers?
Absolutely.
This one is from someone who may have multiple sclerosis. They say, what is the best leafy green to eat for MS patients?
MS patients. I'm really not aware of a diet for MS. Leafy greens are loaded with folic acid. B vitamins can be helpful. So, you know, I'd recommend kale, spinach, different types of cabbage, escarole.
Great. And this one called from Honduras, and they asked, to reduce the risk of cancer, how often and how many legumes should I eat?
How many legumes? Well, I'd recommend about, a 1 cup serving twice a week. They're very high in fiber, high in nutrients, a lot of volume. So an important thing about adding fiber into your diet, you want to do so gradually. So if you're not consuming any, you might want to start with 1/2 cup portions once a week and then gradually build up the frequency.
And I suspect by the way they asked that question, they may be vegetarian already. So would you recommend once a day for that cup, 1 cup serving
then
for
legumes? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. After the break, we'll be taking more of your questions about food and how to cook it. So don't go away.
All day long, I solve problems. It's nuts and bolts and grease. And I love it. But at the end of the day, I think about the world's problems. I wonder why we're all here and how it will end. And I found something that makes sense of it all. Takes the nuts and bolts of history and paints a bigger picture. Now, I have hope.
It is the love of self that brings unrest. When we are born from above, the same mind will be in us that was in Jesus, the mind that led him to humble himself that we might be saved. Then we shall not be seeking the highest place. We shall desire to sit at the feet of Jesus and learn of him. We shall understand that the value of our work does not consist in making a show and noise in the world, and in being active and zealous in our strength. The value of our work is in proportion to the impartation of the Holy Spirit. Trust in God brings holier qualities of mind, so that in patience we may possess our souls.
Now, what about the paleo diet? Check this.
You asked for it, and I put my nose to the Paleolithic grindstone on this paleo diet, and the results, they are interesting. Hey gang, Trace here, reporting for D News. At any given moment, 50% is on a diet. Half! That's a lot. When we debunked the blood type diet, a bunch of people asked about the paleo diet, so I looked into it. Paleolithic diets have been around for decades, but it's coming back, and it claims to be science, though science doesn't really back it up. In case you've never heard of paleo, it claims humans are eating the wrong things. Proponents assert that we should be eating the things that our human ancestors were eating, and nothing else. This means eating lean meats, fresh fruits, fish, vegetables, eggs, nuts, and seeds, and natural oils, like olive or coconut. But it also means that we should not be eating things like grains and other cultivated foods, legumes, which are peanuts and peas and lentils and beans, and dairy products and starches and processed sugars. While they say it's based on history, it doesn't vogue with history. Today, we've got fossilized teeth covered in fossilized junk, so we know that Neanderthals ate wheat and barley, legumes, as well as fruits. They also cooked starches. And having access to prepare and cook foods meant that our most successful evolutionary ancestors could find food anywhere, and those who couldn't died out. Plus, humans mutated to consume milk and dairy products, though not necessarily pints at a time when you include all the creams, milks, and cheeses that we love so much. The human body is constantly adapting. Simply going back to an earlier time won't make your digestive tract rejoice. Dietitians, nutritionists, and doctors all were quick to agree that fresh fruits and vegetables and small amounts of lean meats were all an essential part of a healthy diet. But cutting a whole food group out of a diet is textbook fad, and they agree it is not sustainable. Additionally, the diet offers very little calcium necessary for bone development. Critics say most of the weight loss is likely from regulating calorie intake and portion control. As far as the evolutionary basis, The reason we live longer than 25 years is because we varied our food sources. All in all, the paleo diet does offer a number of healthful benefits if you're interested in consuming a carbohydrate-free diet, a la South Beach, Atkins, or others. Then, the paleo diet might be something to look at, but to base it wholly on science is a bit misleading. Go read the reviews. The people who are advocates for this love it. Personally, I really like the sound of paleo. No processed foods, lots of fruits and vegetables, local meats.
While I cannot agree with the evolutionary theory or about the lean meat, the rest of the paleo diet makes good sense. Our guest today is Roseanne Russ, dietitian and nutritionist. I seize this opportunity to have her answer some of the questions that you, our viewers, have sent in. Here's another question from one of our viewers. Philomena called and she said, my son is 11 and he weighs 112 pounds. He's overweight. He was a big eater even as a baby and I weaned him at 3 months. Are there any side effects about being overweight? Anything that I should worry about? Also, he used to eat vegetables and like them, but now he doesn't want to eat any. He likes to cook, but he cooks things like pancakes, cooks eggs. I need help.
Well, he is 11. I think it's wonderful that she's asking for help now. You know, children often sort of go through food jags. So if he did once eat vegetables, there's a good chance he'll come back to it. And I think children really respond when they can be involved. The fact that he loves to cook is wonderful. She may encourage him to pick out some new recipes out of a cookbook. Go ahead and allow him to make the pancakes because he's involved. You know, maybe look at portion control there, but maybe add something else in. You know, try a veggie omelet or allow him to create his own vegetable recipe. And allow him to participate in the grocery shopping too. You know, if children with any background are able to participate, they usually are more receptive to choosing those foods. A garden is a great idea too. You know, doing a couple pots. It doesn't have to be a huge plot of land. Planting a tomato plant, planting a squash plant, and letting him do that and sort of take care of it, help him nurture it, watch it grow. That sometimes is really beneficial for the child to sort of see where food comes from, and then it's their own creation, and he might get back into the vegetable scene. But a lot of encouragement. And then, of course, we can't talk about good health, especially in children, but in adults as well, without activity. You know, an 11-year-old should be getting at least 60 minutes of physical activity a day, using his large muscles, running, jumping, riding a bike, riding a scooter, all of those things that young kids should be out doing. And I really feel that they have to be outside to do it. You know, indoors is just it's a closed-in space. It doesn't really allow children to use those big muscle groups. So at least an hour of outdoor play every day, because, you know, you want him to enjoy his activity, enjoy the food he's eating, and learn skills for his lifetime. Mm.
All sounds very doable. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a tease question. Are electric ovens and microwaves safe to use?
Electric ovens and microwaves. I think they are. There's certainly been no research that proves otherwise. And what we want to be cautious about with microwaves are more the containers that we're using and the kinds of utensils that we're putting into the microwave. I typically try to avoid plastic wrap when you're, let's say, reheating something and you don't want it to splatter all over. A piece of wax paper is a safer bet. And pay attention to the labels. The plastic wrap packaging will actually say safe or not for microwave use. And that's been tested, so if it has the safety label, it should be safe.
But you're probably saying, if you can transfer it to glass, do that.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I was suggesting just as a cover that plastic wrap. Mm. And I do recommend glass plates, looking for microwave safe dishware, and avoiding the plastic containers because many of them are not microwave safe. And again, checking labels. But to be safe, you know, a glass measuring cup or a glass plate to reheat something is your best bet. Mm.
And of course, it's good to have some raw food every day, not to cook everything that we eat, right?
Absolutely.
Have some raw vegetables or fruit. Or
sure, whatever. Absolutely. Yeah. And not necessarily, you know, and use more traditional stovetop or oven methods of cooking, as opposed to, you don't want to microwave all of your food either.
No, because it gets up to very high temperature and mm-hmm. probably get more destruction of those necessary micronutrients, mm-hmm. perhaps. Where do I get omega-3 without fish oil? I live in Louisiana.
Louisiana. Well, nuts. I think you have some nuts in Louisiana, right? Walnuts are a great source. And, you know, all kinds of nuts are high in healthy fats. So, you know, a small handful of walnuts a day is all it takes to get that omega-3.
Mm. So walnuts. And then there's some seeds as well, aren't there, that people can use, like flaxseed or chia seeds.
Absolutely. Yeah. They can be put into oatmeal in the morning. There are a few supplements that provide those seeds. So that's an option.
Great. Focus on getting plenty of complex carbohydrates and keep those sugars down. Be sure you get sufficient protein, but never more than 30 grams per meal. We need a little fat in our diet, but not so much that we gain weight. And choose those fats wisely. Keep the saturated animal fats as low as possible, or even better, eliminate them completely. Keep sending us your questions. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.